This is episode 348 with running coach, strength coach, and ultra marathoner, Coach Holly Martin. Welcome to the Strength Running Podcast. I'm your host, Coach Jason Fitzgerald, and my singular goal is to help you improve your running by getting stronger, racing faster, preventing more injuries, and achieving more of your goals. And I gotta say, guys, I've really loved our last few episodes. The recovery conversation with Dr. Peter Tierney was really popular, so I'm glad that you enjoyed that. Now, if you're new here, I'm a former cross-country and track and field athlete for Connecticut College, a columnist for Trail Runner magazine, and a 239 marathoner. If you want to learn more about me and strength running, go to strengthrunning.com. And I could not continue this show without the support of our partners. I hope you'll take advantage of the discounts that they're offering. A big thanks to 2Before. Get yourself a whopping 30% discount on their 20-pack and multi-packs at 2before.com for their all-natural, scientifically proven pre-workout with code JASON. 2Before, which is the numeral 2 followed by the word before, is made from New Zealand blackcurrant berries, which improves vasodilation or blood flow, just like beetroot. But they also improve recovery after exercise by managing oxidative stress through their unique ratio of antioxidants, which also have a nice side benefit of supporting your immune system. Now, the main antioxidant is called anthocyanin, which I hadn't heard of before, but is actually more present in New Zealand blackcurrant berries than tart cherries, raspberries, blackberries, or blueberries. Plus, 2Before tastes delicious. I love products that are both good for your performance and good for your overall health. Get yourself 30% off any multi-pack with code JASON at 2before.com. They have a caffeinated and non-caffeinated version, which is great depending on your caffeine tolerance. Me, I love having the caffeinated version with 120 milligrams of caffeine in place of coffee before my morning runs, especially if I'm in a rush and I don't have time to brew a pot of coffee. Go to numeral 2before.com with code JASON for 30% off your order of any multi-pack. I am so grateful for the support of AG1, the health and wellness company that makes comprehensive daily nutrition super simple. Now, I am a man of convenience, which means I don't always choose the healthiest foods, but I also know that I need my body firing on all cylinders to be the best coach, runner, podcast host, and dad that I can be. So I'm finding their product, AG1, really helpful to help optimize my health by giving my body what it needs. You can learn more about it at drinkag1.com/Jason. One scoop gives me 75 vitamins, minerals, and whole food sourced ingredients, including a green superfood blend, probiotics, prebiotics, adaptogens, and more. AG1 helps me fill in any nutrition gaps in my diet, because let's face it, my friends, there are some gaps, and it gives me a nice boost of energy and focus throughout the day. And with 3 kids in elementary school, I know I've got to support my immune system because I'm no match for little kid germs. But what I really love about AG1 is that it changes. Over the last decade, they've made over 50 different improvements to the formula based on the latest research so that there are more nutrients and they are more available for your body to absorb. AG1 is certified for quality and safety by NSF International and is NSF certified for sport, meaning it does not contain any of the more than 270 substances that are banned by professional sports organizations. Go to drinkag1.com/Jason to see the great offer they've put together for our podcast listeners. You're going to get a year's worth of free vitamin D and 5 free travel packs of AG1 with your first purchase. You can sign up for a single shipment or for a monthly drop if you want to make AG1 a part of your regular healthy lifestyle. Go to drinkag1.com/Jason to sign up today. My guest today is Coach Holly Martin. You might recognize Holly if you see clips of this episode on my Instagram at JasonFitz1. She has filmed hundreds of videos for the Run Experience over the years and has coached both runners and strength athletes. Holly has a unique background, which makes her perspective on training so valuable. She was formerly a professional ballet dancer before getting into CrossFit and then ultramarathons. What range? Holly can seemingly do it all. And in our conversation today, we're talking about a specific situation: ultra running and strength training. Should ultra runners strength train? How should it be different compared to a middle distance runner? What happens when running needs to take priority over strength training? And how should strength training progress over the course of an ultra season? By the way, if you're ready to start strength training, but you're not sure where to start, get our complimentary strength series at strengthrunning.com/strength. You'll learn more about common training errors, how to lift for power, and all of the amazing physical benefits you can expect. And now, without further delay, please enjoy my conversation with Holly Martin. Holly, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
So Holly, I have to admit, I have been a fan of your content for years. You've probably recorded more training videos than I have, which is kind of a tall order there. And I've always appreciated your very direct communication style. So I'm excited to connect here and learn more from you.
Awesome. I'm super excited to do so. It's funny how many years have gone by of doing it and you don't even realize. And you're like, how many times have I talked about this one topic? But you realize that whoever clicked on that might not have seen anything else, and you have to talk with fresh perspective, you know? But yeah, it feels like no time has gone by at the same time.
Yeah. And you know, the funny thing about strength training and just training theory in general too, is I feel like the rate of our learning on these topics is almost increasing year by year. We're just learning so much about what works and the different ways that we can do things. And I'm excited to learn from you in particular, Holly, because you inhabit this really interesting space of being both a running and a strength coach and someone who has done ultra marathons up to the 100-mile distance, if I'm not mistaken. And you have a CrossFit background. So you've done it all. And you started as a professional ballet dancer and did that for 5 years. So
yes,
you have just this very varied athletic background that I just think is not only fun and interesting, but also I think just really prepares you for the demands of especially running ultra marathons.
Totally. If you had asked me, you know, at even like 16, if I would think that that would be the trajectory, I totally wouldn't have seen it coming in any capacity at all. But it is strange how much they all go together and how much they can all complement each other. But it's funny because all three of those things, ballet, CrossFit, ultra running, don't technically belong together. And they're all very cult-like. And when you cross into each other, they don't love it. You know, like I feel like, especially the CrossFit to ultra marathon, there's more of a gap now where there's a crossover, but I feel like that is total opposites: short, sprinty, muscly, and then you're supposed to do this for 12 plus hours, you know, going into something long. So
there's definitely a ballet runner, CrossFitter, and ultra marathoner walk into a bar joke in here somewhere.
Somewhere. I've got to get that together and figure out what that is.
Here's a challenge to our listeners. If you come up with the joke, please send it to Holly and I would absolutely love to hear it.
And then I'll use it. I'll give you credit and I'll use them the next place I end up.
Excellent.
Yeah. But it is funny. I think the nature of going from one thing to the next, and I know even a lot of runners experience like different categories of running that they become passionate about, whether it's like injury caused them to change categories or doing really well at a certain race changed categories for them or whatever, like, oh, this is my strength. And that's like life, right? You know, that's just how it continues to unfold. It's like you go with your strengths and maybe adversity helps you get there as well.
I would love to know what was going through your head when you were this professional ballet dancer, and then all of a sudden you're like, I think I'm going to start running ultra marathons. Like, was that a natural transition or was there a significant moment that pushed you in that direction?
It was actually a pretty significant headspace that I was in for, I would say, the second half of college. So I majored in ballet at University of Utah, which is a really strong ballet program. The plan was always go do the professional route after this, whether it be freelance, contemporary ballet, or audition and be in a small company, you know, or larger, whatever came about. And really what it was the really tough thing about ballet, and for my body type, at my absolute skinniest, leanest I've ever been, I'm still extremely muscular and stocky, built more like a gymnast than a dancer. So at my best, working my hardest, as best I could be in the craft, there was still going to be jobs that I wasn't going to get. And what really bugged me about that was there'd be girls in auditions or classes working half as hard as I was working in and out of the studio. And something that struck me about running was, if I bust my ass, I don't know if I'm allowed to say that on, can I say ass on this podcast? Okay. I can directly get results from that, and no one can take that from you when you go race. So like, as hard as you want to work, you can go get those results. And that was the difference between that and dance. So dance, I found my groove, and I found jobs that were, and companies that were great for me, that were perfect for the way that I wanted to perform and dance and like honestly find endurance that way. But my favorite part of any of that, not even performing, was just rehearsing. Like, I loved working really hard for a lot of hours. And so ultra, just like once I started getting into running, it like, it just was like, wow, this is the part I liked most about dancing. And no one has to audition me to figure out if I even get to go to the start line. And I loved that.
It's so funny that you say that, because that was exactly my mind space as well when I really started getting into running. Because I was a basketball player before I was a runner. And, you know, I sort of stopped growing in high school, you know, like I'm 5'7". I was never going to be on the basketball team. And I also just didn't like the fact that so much was out of your control as a team sport athlete. Maybe coach didn't put you in. Maybe someone didn't pass you the ball, or maybe someone passed you the ball when they should have passed it to someone else. And so many things were just up to other people. And I really loved the fact that with running, it was like, you're in charge, you put in the work, and you get the results. And just like your experience, I really fell in love with that. And even though I just didn't like running at all when I first started, I gradually, maybe not so gradually, you know, over maybe a month or two, just completely fell in love with it because of that, you know, effort in one side and results out the other side.
Totally.
I absolutely love that. Let's talk a little bit more about strength training and ultra running, because this is sort of like ballet and ultra running, or CrossFit and ultra running. You know, these things are like oil and water to a lot of runners.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that there's this common idea that ultra runners spend so much time running that they don't have time for strength training, or that you just don't need to be that strong to run ultra marathons. But when you're working with an ultra marathoner who's gearing up for some type of ultra, do you like to see strength training in their program?
I really do, for so many reasons, but I think that strength training is that underlying superpower that you're going to pull from at any or many, many points throughout the race. And you might not see it in real time, but it's happening. And it's this layer of defense against injury, against breakdown, honestly, against poor form that happens for a lot of people, you know, later on in the race. But it's interesting what you said a few minutes ago about when you see like the top ultra runners, the speed goats, the tiny, you know, they're flying through the mountains. That's all they practice. I think there is such a sweet spot there of being at the absolute top of your game, knowing exactly your body, knowing what to do before you break down and everything. What I love about strength training is for the commoner, someone like I'm working with, or, you know, somebody who's just trying to do this for a personal goal, strength training gives you that toolbox that you're going to have and that underlying like true makeup for when your mind quits. So I always kind of see it as this dance between 50-50 mind and body. When one's breaking down, the other has to pull up the slack. And I think the biggest thing strength does is come in when you least expect it. Some of my strongest moments in a long race have literally happened in the last quarter of that race, which is so weird. And I attribute that to strength.
Yeah. And I got to say, that's never happened to me. I've never felt my strongest in the last quarter of a race. But I also have to admit that when I was racing at my best, I wasn't really doing too much strength training. And I love how you described it as a layer of defense. You know, I've used this analogy that strength training is almost like wearing a suit of armor. It protects you from some of the impact and forces of running. And it can be this really wonderful training strategy to help you not just stay healthy, but also, like you said, find strength later on, especially in a very long race, just like an ultramarathon, like we're talking about. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what are we trying to gain from strength training as an ultra runner? I assume it's not the same list of benefits that, say, a middle distance track runner might be looking for who's getting ready for the mile. You know, we're looking for something else, right?
Yeah. And it's interesting because even I would say, like, you know, in the way you've succeeded in the marathon and even in the half and pushing through to the end so that truly you can say nothing was left on the table. I almost feel, and this is weird because the top ultra runners are going to look at their races the same way you would in a marathon. But like for me, I want to know that I am still holding on strong at the end. That's more what I'm focused on versus pushing everything out and using every bit of my power so that the gas tank's emptying as I go. So it's completely depleted by the end, but I've also made it as fast as I wanted to make it. Where I see it kind of come in with the ultras is like, it's almost just, you don't know what's going to come up and you want to be this engine that can keep chugging along. And I think strength supports really, strength and form can go hand in hand. Cause I also like to use strength as a way to look under the hood. What's going on? What am I doing wrong? You know, things that are not obvious at the time and maybe they don't come up quite in the run, but you realize habitual things maybe in the strength work as well. So you can find those early before they're a big problem.
So strength training can almost be this diagnostic tool is what you're saying. Like it can inform you on weaknesses, imbalances, poor movement patterns, because if you're running ultras, all of those things are going to be exacerbated and even magnified later in the race.
Oh yeah.
So, you know, you don't have to go run 90 miles to figure out your weaknesses. Maybe you can get in the gym and do it in a safer way and find out, you know, what happens when I'm really tired. If I put, you know, myself under load, where am I going to start to fail? Because then that tells you where you should focus on, right?
Yeah. And that same token, like using the magnifying glass, single leg work is so important for this. Obviously we know, what both legs do together is not what each individual leg, if we were just looking at that, is doing. And when we really start to see things break down, and I would say a good way to look at that is take your shoes off in the gym, single leg squats, single leg deadlifts, things like that, even without load yet, no weight. And you see what your foot wants to do, what your ankle wants to do. You start to see why you might be collapsing in your knee or sitting in your hip. And over time, thousands and thousands of steps, there's no escaping what that left leg is doing or that left foot is doing. And so the sooner you find that out and get that plan of attack, the better off you're going to be, you know, over time. Obviously you keep multiplying that, but you'll be seeing what's going on. Same thing. You add weight to a back squat, you add weight to a deadlift. Can you hold up against that weight? And if you can't, why, what is breaking down?
Yeah. So not only is it a diagnostic tool, but it can really help you identify those areas that are going to start being your problem areas later in a race. And then once you know what those are, you can start focusing on them a little more, and then you just become much more durable later on in a marathon. So when you think about strength training for ultra runners, it is part injury prevention. You want to stay healthy during the race when you're under high fatigue levels. Part of it is maintaining good form, right? Like you want to, you know, not have your form completely fall apart in the late stages of an ultra when you're super tired. You know, I'll admit that's my kryptonite right there. That's what always happens to me. I feel like I have this engine that just wants to go, 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 but I just fall apart because, you know, I'm not strong enough for hours and hours of running at the paces that I've tried to do. Are we looking for any performance benefits as well? And I know, of course, that if you stay healthy and your form doesn't fall apart, your performance is going to be better. But are there more direct performance benefits of strength training for ultra runners?
Absolutely. I think and I get a lot of questions from people about like heart rate specific. How much should we focus on this? What is it an indicator of in terms of us in a long race? Can that really even be a factor when we're 15 hours in? Depends on what we've eaten, how's the heat? All those things are factors at that point. But what I would say is this is where the CrossFit kind of came in for me. I found that I could work on my strength, form, and endurance from a different aerobic standpoint than just my steady state long distance running. And I felt like that was my superpower there in the way of I'm going to move really hard for 10 minutes and try to keep good form through squats, lunges, burpees, whatever it is I'm doing, and not break down in this. And I felt like I got a lot of fitness from my strength work, even the slow days too, but just I noticed my heart rate dropping for my longer runs and feeling just a lot more fit for longer. And I attribute it to that. I also think the muscle, as long as it's not so much you're really building up to weigh yourself down, I feel like it can be that enhancer to knowing what to expect on any run. So it's not so up and down, you know, depending on climate, et cetera. I felt like it stabilized my performance in ways.
Yeah. And I think some of the higher intensity lifting can be really helpful to bridge the gap. So if you're not able to do hard workouts, or if you're not able to, you know, run 100 miles a week in training, some of these other training strategies might be really helpful, like some heavier weightlifting or more intense weightlifting. You know, we could get into cross training, although that's sort of a separate discussion. But all these things can sort of bridge the gap between the training that you think might be ideal or perfect, and then the training that you're actually able to do, you know, on a daily and weekly basis.
Absolutely. And I think we would love it if we were all training like professional runners and we had one job and it was to just work out all day. But it's sadly not the reality for a lot of the people that watch our stuff, or, you know, that we work with, or, you know, even, you know, the top runners like can't necessarily make money enough to not have another job, right? And so when you factor all that in, you start thinking, what's the most bang for my buck? That's sustainable over several months. You know, it doesn't feel like I'm going up and down and feeling good or feeling bad. And it really has to be timed out perfectly around my race.
You're just making me think back to me dreaming about the schedule of an elite runner, how I would love to train twice a day separated by a nap.
It's literally the dream. And then just everything is conducive to, you know, it's like the one goal and everyone's on the team for the one goal. It's so nice.
If only. But Holly, if someone is not used to strength training, but they are running ultras or they're gearing up for their first ultra marathon, how would you advise someone to get started? Is there a good introductory way of thinking about strength training for a beginner who is training for an ultra?
Yeah, I think the first thing I would have someone do is, I'll start with pipe dream. You find a trainer, that knows runners, that knows running, even if you did one session with that person, even if it was online, but something where you got to get some input from someone by just looking at you, I would strongly suggest in person or a Zoom so they can see basic mechanics. So you first want to uncover where your weak spots are, and not just from an actual, like literally weak spot, but where are your tight areas? Where do you tend to land when you walk? How do you sit? What do you spend your time doing mostly when you're not running? And start from there, because we'll have less problems getting into strength if we start with no weight, body weight only, but we start to, I call it like activating or waking up certain areas. So a lot of times, like I had a horrible hip injury. Actually, it was the day I signed up for my first 100. I literally signed up that morning, and that afternoon I stood up off the couch, had a sharp pain, and it was months of getting that under control. And I didn't realize until PT then that I had a really, really weak glute medius. Like it basically was non-existent. And I couldn't believe that because I had really strong quads, generally strong overall, but I had no idea until that happened. So if someone's first getting into strength training, I would say get someone who knows what they're looking at to start to figure out your holes. And as you start to get those working, you can do, you know, higher rep counts, lower weight, and then start to add load from there.
I think this idea of just hiring a trainer or a strength coach for just one, maybe two sessions is a really, really good idea. It's sort of like hiring a running coach for just a couple months leading up to a goal race.
Yep.
You know, it might not be like the perfect situation for long-term progress and development, but at the same time, it's so much better than nothing. And with strength training in particular, where form is really important, especially as you start adding weight and you start doing more complex types of weightlifting exercises, just having an idea of your personal movement patterns, what you do well and what you don't do well, I think is extraordinarily valuable. And, you know, if you think about it just in terms of, you know, a one-time investment in your knowledge of yourself as an athlete, you know, that's going to set you up for success in the long term. It's also probably going to save you a lot of heartache because you might, you know, skip one major injury that you could have gotten because now you know a little bit more, or your result in all your future races is going to be a little bit better because you remember a couple lessons from working with that trainer or running coach. So I think just that idea is fantastic.
I think too, with something individualized like that, you know, the first thing you think is like, oh, so expensive. Like, I thought running was supposed to be cheap. Now we're paying for the shoes and the coach and the whole thing. But like you just said, you're paying for like almost insurance or some sort of starting information that would help you, one, sleep easier if something did come up. How many people do we know that start running, their knee hurts, and they think they broke their knee. They think they broke something. Like, you know, it's just the quickest drawing that conclusion without knowing the other information. And so when you have somebody who knows the tie between the strength and the running, they can tell you, you're going to be doing this, you know, with or without me, but this is how it's going to pay off in your race or in your next run. And you'll see that right away. And whether you can stay with them or, like you said, lead up to the race with them, great. If you can't, it at least sets you on the path of understanding you're not just the average going into the gym, doing some bicep curls and leaving. You know, there has to be a purpose behind what you're doing if you're going to spend the time.
Yeah. Yeah. And unless you're only trying to look good on the beach, you probably just want to have a more robust workout than bicep curl.
Might be a bit different. Yeah.
Just a quick break to thank our partner Tubefore, a powerful sports supplement made from New Zealand black currants designed to increase endurance, manage inflammation, support immunity, and promote adaptation. Tubefore helps boost performance by increasing blood flow, making it more efficient for the body to pump oxygenated, nutrient-rich blood into the muscles. Boost your performance before your next big workout and support your immune system with Tubefore's high antioxidant pre-workout. Use code JASON for 30% off their 20-pack and multi-serve packs at tubefore.com. Hey, a quick break to thank our partner, AG1, the high-nutrient probiotic drink that helps you cover all of your nutrition bases. I love this stuff. AG1 is the most popular greens mix available with 75 vitamins and minerals, prebiotics, probiotics, antioxidants, and adaptogens. To make taking control of your health even easier, AG1 is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune system-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. You can't be fast if you're not first healthy, and so many runners have reported positive benefits from extra recovery to lower heart rates. Visit drinkag1.com/Jason, and you can choose from a single purchase or a monthly subscription for those ready to make this part of your ongoing nutrition plan. See all the details at drinkag1.com/Jason. All right, so if someone isn't brand new to strength training, you know, they have a little bit of background, maybe they've just been doing a lot of body weight exercises, and so, you know, they're familiar with a lot of movements, how would you advise someone to structure their strength training on a weekly basis? You know, are we doing a strength workout every day? Is it harder workout some days than other days, just like our running? How do you think about the structure?
If you are capable of fitting in two sessions a week, I think both should be really quality sessions where you are forcing yourself to look at certain weaknesses. I think one of those days should be heavier in volume, lower rep counts, higher weights, being really, really focused on what your body does under that weight. Using form is a good way to know if you're hovering in the territory of too heavy. We don't need to be doing anything crazy unless you want to be building strength. And even for a lot of guys, if you want to be actually increasing your muscle amount, if you're not trying to do that, you're just trying to maintain good, strong running, I would say use form as your guide. If you break down at the bottom of a back squat, you can't even engage your core, you're rounded forward, it's too heavy. but working really heavy on one of those days, you know, relative to what you can do. On the other day, I would say just technical. We haven't really talked about this yet, but in ultras, you want to be nimble on your downhills and you want to be strong on your uphills. So the best way to do that is to make sure you have really strong, secure glutes, hamstrings, quads. Those are good to go, supporting your knees, supporting your ankles. And then you want to be doing some stuff for your agility, knowing how to pick up your feet quick over technical terrain. If that's a lot of ultras, you're going to be going all over the place, tree roots, things. You're going to be tired. You're not going to be thinking straight. That strength that you can build when you're already tired in higher rep counts, more circuit style, but single leg, jumping, agility, et cetera, prepares you for how you're going to respond when you're about to trip over the tree limb, you know, at mile 70. So a combo of those two.
I have these visions of you like doing ballet down a technical trail right now, just like sort of, you know, nimbly prancing very agilely down the trail. I'm sure that came in handy.
It definitely did. I like to think that that's what it looks like. And I know that it doesn't. The funny thing is when I lived in San Francisco and I would go on these group trail runs with some really amazing runners, they were so fast that I always described it as their feet never hit the ground. They were genuinely gliding. I mean, they were so quick to pick it up, like that you didn't have enough time to land and anything to happen. You were on to the next step. I think those people are really, really skilled. You have to work on that. But I think in the gym can be a place you do that and slow it down and just understand why that person can balance and why you can't. Using BOSU balls, using foam pads. Like I said, barefoot's always good. Keep a sock on for respect for everybody else. But, you know, just being able to know what your feet are doing. You know, it's not just about the shoe.
Yeah. And that's a really good point. Like, we're not just hurling heavy barbells around in the gym. We're actually working on some very specific skills that are going to help us in the race itself. So it sounds like you're a big fan of heavy lifts sometimes. You're also a fan of single leg exercises. You know, you mentioned a single leg squat, a single leg deadlift. I think particularly for trail runners and ultra runners, it's really important to do single leg work just because, you know, like you said, you're going to have to navigate some technical terrain. It's really important to have the balance and single leg strength to be able to do that. Do you advise any sort of drills or plyometrics to work on that kind of quickness as well? How would that look?
Yeah, totally. I think the one commonality I would see this with like a more mid-distance runner, someone in track, you want to be powerful. And not for the same reasons that you would want to be powerful in speed. You want to be powerful from the fact that that is in your tank. Like, you have the ability to be explosive. You're not necessarily going to execute on that, but you're going to have that muscle, that defense, like we've talked about there as a source, as a place to pull from. So I love box jumps, you know, just nice quality one level to another level, jumping up, nothing crazy, nothing too high. I love anything on the ladder, like agility ladders. It's kind of crazy how people can feel super, super out of touch with their bodies when they do things like that. But I think you should be out of your comfort zone a little bit because, again, the goal is you do all this crazy stuff in the gym, but you go back out there on your normal run. It should feel so much simpler to you after that. It should feel so much more steady to you after that, smoother. So I love an agility ladder. And the box jumps. And then honestly, I do a lot of like skipping work with a lot of my clients. So we'll do, you know, lunge to high skip, even, you know, some bounding drills, even some strides, things that are just getting them in like high power situations, be explosive, and then getting those benefits still when you go out there for the long time, but you might not be seeing them in the actual action, you know.
You know, this reminds me of when I trained for the steeplechase. So I was a steeplechaser a long time ago.
Yeah.
And I spent a season doing all kinds of different drills and hip mobility work, workouts over hurdles, you know, practicing the water jump, all the things that steeplechasers have to practice. And it was all new to me. And I found that it made me feel so much better on easy runs and even in the other races that weren't the steeplechase. So it was a season where I also set a PR in the 1500 and the 5K, and I just felt more athletic. And I think this idea of drawing from a reserve a reserve of endurance, a reserve of strength, but also a reserve of movement ability. You know, just becoming a better athlete in general is going to help you in these situations where fatigue is high, you still have to navigate some technical terrain. You might have been on your feet for 6, 7, 8 hours. And so, you know, this idea of doing a lot of things that may not be directly specific to the event that you're training for, but nevertheless are working on these physical skills that are going to help you regardless.
Absolutely. I think it's the same reason that somebody might complain, you know, someone who I have doing a flat half marathon complains that I have them doing hill work. And I explain for so many reasons this hill work is going to make your flat running faster and stronger overall. Yeah, there's nothing better than feeling athletic. I think you see this a lot, actually. Speaking of basketball, you know, that's what you wanted to originally do. I'm a huge NBA fan, randomly, big Warriors basketball fan. And I think one of the coolest things is watching good players who either get injured or have a setback with a contract or something and end up in a position they weren't planning on being. You see them come back and they're 10 times better than they ever were if they use that opportunity just to expand what they know about the game, but also like what they had to do physically in the game. And you don't see that if you're on a linear trajectory the whole time, just planning on, I do this activity, so I train for this activity, and you just leave it at that. I think we're all a lot better when we're mixing it up, which is like, I think the whole concept of like your business and everything, you know, strength and running together, like, weren't all, that's not popular, or was not popular as a combo. It was often thought, you know, muscle is going to slow you down. It's going to make you less performative, you know, at a higher speed. And, you know, we find, I think it actually makes you longer lasting and stronger and less injury prone, obviously, at all sorts of distances and speeds. So you see that a lot with just mixing up your workouts.
That's a good analogy with the basketball players, because it's true. I mean, you would never imagine a basketball player only playing basketball games to prepare for a basketball game. But we expect ultra runners to only go on a lot of long runs to prepare for an ultra marathon, which is just one long run. And, you know, this idea of becoming a better athlete is just, I think, so fundamental to getting the most out of yourself as an athlete and becoming, you know, the fastest, more injury resilient runner that you can be. Now, Holly, I'm sure that a lot of folks are listening to us and they're like, all right, single leg squats and box jumps and agility work and all this stuff. And they're like, I just might be really tired from all of my ultra running. So yep. Can you speak to the very real concern that because of the volume, the long run, maybe the workout during the week, an ultra runner just might not have the energy for all this stuff. Like, how do you balance that?
This is a hard one. I had a girl this morning, you know, one of my clients, and she's training for 100 and she is totally overwhelmed. She, like, from the standpoint of what does my schedule look like? So the thing you're going to have to do if you want to play the long game here and say you're 8 months out from your race is you have to be more strategic than the average runner. You have to really know what you're getting out of each week. I would say block in your headspace things into months, 3 months at a time, 1 month at a time, and then the current week you're on, just loosely with your goals, just knowing what page you're on and why it's serving you that particular week. I really like back-to-back days where you're doing things when you're already tired. I think that's the best prep you can have for an ultra. That being said, if I'm, you know, months out from my race and I do a double day, you know, really heavy strength session, maybe even a short run right after, and then I'm going to go put my long run the day after that, I'm going to recover really hard the following 2 days. Maybe a little core work to supplement, some stretching, maybe a massage or mobility work, whatever, and then I'll get back to it. But I think we have to lose the concept of doing something every day or we're falling behind. I think that's not going to be your friend in that case. Also, just we don't really get to throw fluff up miles or whatever, fill in miles just for the sake of it. I really do think you need to have a purpose for everything you're going to do. So as it breaks down throughout the week, I always say you really need one recovery day if you're going to do this for the long haul. And for anything that's coming up or tweaks or any pains, you need to have time for that to kind of get ahead of it. And then I just, you know, a quality 3 to 4 runs really strong runs with purpose, whether they're shorter for speed or you're doing hill work or intervals, obviously the long run, et cetera, and prioritizing, you know, what type of strength you want to be doing. Like, it gets hairy with the classes, the class workouts and things as fill-ins, because it gets easy to just show up. It's easier to show up for the class and be done with it, but you have to be selective. And on this note, if you're in any sort of a group workout class and you're training for something specific, don't be afraid to tell the coach or don't tell the coach. Make modifications as you need for your particular goal. I think people are scared to do that, but you're paying. That's your gym to go to. And obviously you want to be respectful, but you want to get what you need out of it.
That's a really good point, because I think a lot of runners fall into some traps with strength training when they just adhere to some classes that they're going to, because a lot of those classes, some of them include intervals on a treadmill. Some of them include high intensity interval training using a bicycle. And there's just a lot of things that are often in these classes that an ultra runner just might not need when it comes to their strength training. So I think a good follow-up question might be, when is it okay to cut a strength session short? Are there any times when you would abandon something or not do a strength workout or cut it short? Otherwise, you know, sort of put it in the basket of, this is a second tier thing I'm doing and I'm going to focus more on my running.
Yeah, totally. I would say a good indicator of when I would start dialing that down would be your hunger. So hormone imbalances and things where you start to get your system is starting to feel fatigued to the point where you don't think you can catch up to it. We've all had those experiences where you can't eat enough. You can't sleep enough. You're really starting to break down from that standpoint. That's usually where I start to come out of the gym and focus more on the run. And I know I'll come back to that, but if I'm going in the gym and I can't even do anything of quality, whether that be like the right amount of weight I want to be lifting, or even feeling like I can have good form by the fifth lap of something or whatever, I'm not going to do it. I'd rather just go focus on a solid run, steady heart rate, you know, depending on the type of run I'm going to be doing. But I always use like internally and my hunger as a guide and sleep. I feel like those are really good indicators that you might be overdoing it to some extent.
Yeah. And, you know, I tend to be a little bit more cautious around a couple categories of exercise. So for example, any kind of hard workout, you need to be in the right space to execute a hard workout. The same thing with lifting very heavy weight. You know, if you're getting in the gym to do some squats or deadlifts and the goal is to lift, you know, whatever heavy is for you, you know, you have to be in the right space for that. And you're not in the right space if you're carrying a ton of fatigue or soreness into that workout. If you haven't slept well for a couple days, you know, I think being underfueled is a really good thing to be aware of, because, you know, if you're lifting, you're probably running either before or after. It's probably some type of double session or just included in one long session. And if you're going to do that, fine, but we've got to make sure you're well fueled, or else, you know, the potential risk for injury or just not really getting much out of the session is really high.
I think that's a good way of putting it. Are you getting anything out of the session? And if you're not in a place originally to get anything out of the session, why do it in the first place and learn the hard way? I would also say, like, a lot of stupid injuries happen in those sessions where you went anyway and you sort of did it, sort of didn't, you know, and you even see in your headspace, if I'm exhausted, I'm like, at least I got to the gym. I'm definitely not warming up or cooling down because I'm proud that I even got to the gym at all. So now I'm giving myself half the ability I'd have just because I was almost feeling sorry for myself. It's this weird thing. Like, I think you're so right. Go do it if you're going to do it. Don't do it if you're not. But this in-between kind of thing, and maybe just to add extra fatigue with no real benefit, is kind of pointless. You could say this about extra recovery time as well. You know, whether you were trading the strength for running or just ditching that day altogether, you set yourself up for a much better long-term result.
Yeah, that's definitely true. And I think too, like, if you're not going to be in a place where you can feel good, you can execute it well, you can either reach or get close to your goals for the session, then it might not be a good idea to do. It's sort of like if you wake up on a fast workout day and you only got 3 hours of sleep, you're still sore from the day before, you ran out of coffee, so you don't even have any caffeine to get you through that workout, and it's like raining outside, and you left your shoes with better traction in your, you know, somewhere else. It's like, oh my God, you're really stacking the deck against you. And the possibility that something goes wrong is just going to be really high.
Really high.
I like to just dial back the intensity in those situations. So if you have a, you know, you did a run in the morning, you're going to the gym after work, it's supposed to be your heavy lifting day, and you just don't have it. I like to see a runner, okay, let's just do some easy body weight strength training. You know, maybe it's just some mobility work. Let's get your body moving, but let's not have any high performance demands when we're feeling like this.
And on that same note, if that goes that way and you do the lighter load to be smart in that day, don't spend the whole next day agonizing over the fact that you did that and then overcompensating on your next workout. I think we see that so much because people, the reason we all are so dedicated is because we're so dedicated. It's this chicken and egg cycle. So you're so hard on yourself in a good way, but you don't want it to be a detriment. So I always say, like, stay present on the day you're on. You made the decision. You made that choice to do that. Move forward with it. And you don't want to be, it's funny with ultras because I a lot of times I'm like, well, if I go do this really hard thing anyway, even though I'm exhausted, that's a really good training tool for my brain for the mid ultra, whatever. And that might be true, but that can't be a regular part of your weekly routine. I don't know that you'll make it to the start line in that way if you're just constantly so tired.
Yeah. I mean, you're probably going to get hurt or you're flirting with overtraining syndrome. It's just not a fun place to be. And it's not also the environment in which all those positive adaptations can occur. So you might just be working hard for the sake of working hard. Now, Holly, I'm curious, like, how you think about progression with strength training during an ultramarathon season. You know, like, let's say a runner is training for 20 weeks for their ultra. How should strength training generally progress from the beginning of that cycle to the end? I assume you're not going to do exactly the same thing for all 20 weeks, right?
Right. A lot of this is going to have to do with where we start with. I kind of mentioned those weak spots, kind of where we find your target areas to be. I would say in the middle, kind of peak, you know, right in the middle of your training, you're 2-3 months in, you want to feel like you can consistently depend on your body to go resist against certain weights, you know, towards your heaviest, your 80%, et cetera. Slowly starting to come down. So it's kind of this like up to the mountain in the middle, kind of coming down from there. And then I always know in those last 2 months before your race, we're going to be doing some level of problem solving. So it's not going to be necessarily you're hurt or you're dealing with pain, but you are dealing with fatigue and burnout in ways. So we're kind of matching where we're at there too. So I would say it starts pretty general. You know, you find workouts you like, you adapt and build weights, you know, from there, but not to the extent that you just want to keep seeing the number go higher, just that you feel your body getting stronger and responding well in your runs. Ultimately, we do this for the run, so we want to make sure that we're seeing that performance there. And then tweaking our stuff to make sure we're getting what we need as time goes on. But it's easy to get lost. As I said, you just have to make sure you're staying on top of why you're getting there in the first place, what you're doing the strength for. Now, if you feel like things are slowing majorly down in the second half of your training, careful just how much you're lifting, how frequently, the higher reps you're doing, even at medium weight, you can start to see some muscle growth and build in maybe a way that's making your runs not feel good. Like you might be weighing yourself down a bit. So it's kind of flirting with that line there.
Yeah, I think it's a good point too to remember that when you are in peak training, your running is the most important thing. So any strength training really should be in service of your running. And a big issue that I often see with clients is that they really do like to see the number of how much they're lifting increase, maybe not week after week, but, you know, a couple times a month, maybe 2 or 3 times a month, they add a little bit of weight. And I tend to think that's the last thing we really want in the weight room as ultra runners. Yes, we want to be getting stronger, but I like to think of all this lifting weights and strength training that we're doing as not just an exercise in getting stronger, but also in movement practice. And so, you know, in the last 2 months of your ultra season, even if you're not increasing the weight at all, you're maintaining strength, you're lifting the same weight while your running is getting stronger. So you're doing it in the context of more physical fatigue and, you know, there's just more demands on your body. So in a way, you're actually, you know, the workout's more impressive. You know, if you do a strength training workout and you're not running at all, I'm more impressed if you do that same strength training workout, but you're running 50 miles a week with, like, you know, this super long run and a workout and all these other things in your training. So I think the context is important. And I just wanted to be clear that it's totally fine if you don't increase in weight, especially, you know, at the end of your season when your running is probably at its peak.
I couldn't have said it better. It's exactly right. Like, I don't know why I want to use the word cool, but to me, it's more cool that you would come in and do, you know, a solid amount of weight after having done 25 or 30 miles the day before, but you came in and you moved well under whatever weight that it was. That to me is like, okay, this person's in good shape. They're knowing their body really, really well. Numbers are so, and this is why I've always struggled with a bit of the numerics of running, you know, it can get super data driven really quickly. Don't make the strength another piece of that. Like, this is about the running, but the stronger you are and the more the strength works for the running, that's your primary focus. You don't want to lose sight of that, especially at the end, for just the sake of the number going up.
But we're runners, Holly. We love to put numbers around everything. And I'm sure half our listeners have Excel spreadsheets of years of training metrics and their waking heart rate for going back until, you know, 2004.
It's amazing. And I always find myself, and I'm like, I say I don't like numbers, but I do the same thing. I'm always checking the numbers and stuff like that. And I love it for reference. And it keeps us going, honestly, in ways. That's what keeps you on track to feel like you're part of your goal. There's something to measure it by. There's just so many moving pieces. And going back to the original point, which is like, doing all this and having the volume and having months of this to get through, how do you make it enjoyable? How do you actually feel like this is your sport? You are in control of what you're doing. You're not at the mercy of any aches and pains. You're going to know what to do in them. Like, it needs to feel so big picture and sustainable that when you get through this race, you don't want to feel like you hate it. You know, you can't be like, thank goodness I'm done with it forever. You know, you want to feel energized by the success.
Yeah. And if you're healthy, if you kept it together and didn't fall apart over the last 10, 20 miles of the ultra, I think you're just going to be in a really better headspace to recover from the race. And then you're just going to be more excited to get back into training and sign up for your next race, no matter what that might be.
Absolutely.
I'm curious, Holly, are there any types of strength training that you would advise runners to stay away from? Certain types of classes or certain types of lifting that just might either not really serve their goals or might actually detract from their running?
That's a good question. I think not specific movements. What I would say is it's a really hairy territory to start shortening, tightening, strengthening everything if you're not going to match that with mobilizing. This is super, super important. I would say that if you are not used to squatting, deadlifting, you know, balancing, you know, that kind of thing, even the core stuff, your body's going to respond in a way that it's actually quite locked up. And if you go run on that body without having stretched or actually, like, you know, undone a little bit of what you did, you know, in the gym, you're going to see that show up pretty quickly. So I always use like ankles as a good example. We put a lot of load down, obviously, and stabilizing our lower leg when we're doing a lot of the strength work. And if I don't then go stretch my ankles, sit off tension at the bottom of a squat for a minute or two, do my range of motion exercises, et cetera, I'm going to take all that tightness with me onto the run. And that can be slippery slope. Your heels aren't kissing the ground anymore. If you're doing a lot of hill work, getting ready for an ultra, your calves get blown up, shin splints can take over, all that kind of stuff can happen. So I'd say first and foremost, just make sure that anything you are doing in the gym, you are matching it with stretching, warm-ups, cool-downs. They don't need to be long, but they have to be happening. The second thing I would say is just in terms of types of movement, anything super technical or like skill-based, and you see that a lot in the CrossFit gyms and stuff like that, just ask yourself what purpose it's serving you. It's, again, this is kind of like the number thing. It's easy to be in an environment and all of a sudden you're swept up and caring if you can do that specific skill. But if you don't directly understand why that would benefit your running and it's a risk for injury, like I wouldn't do that.
Can you give us an example of something that might be too technical or skill-based? The only thing that popped into my head was a muscle-up.
That's exactly what I was kind of thinking. But I also, I think there's a lot of strain, like, so a pistol squat, for example, for anyone listening who doesn't know what that is, it's a single leg, you know, full depth squat. And these can be, if not modified properly, can do all kinds of things to your knee and hip if you're not careful. Those types of things are great if you know exactly what you're doing. And if you don't, I don't see a place for a pistol squat necessarily for a runner if they're not being watched over. With anything pull-up, muscle-up related, you know, that's not technically helping our running. It's helping our upper body strength and our posture maybe and our form in that way. But you don't need to be doing it. And I would say because we're already limited on time for our training, you know, spend that time on something that's going to be more core focused or, you know, glutes, something lower body.
I want to double click real quick on what you said about things that make you feel tight, you know, like heavy lifting, I think is one thing that if you're not used to that, it does make you feel a little, you know, you'll feel muscle bound even if you're as skinny as I am.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, I put a bunch of other things in that category of, if you do this, you're just not going to feel super physically robust afterward. A long run is an example. Like if you do your long run on a Saturday morning, you probably are not going to feel your most athletic on Saturday afternoon. Same thing with a very hard track workout or hill workout, something like that. So if you have a lot of things in your training that cause you to feel tight or just kind of muscle bound a little bit, you know, like that soreness that sort of restricts your movement slightly, hard workouts, long runs, even just high volume overall, like, you know, right. You're running 12 miles a day, you're probably going to feel kind of tight on a day-to-day basis. And so the more of those things are in your training, I think the more important it is to do your mobility work, to spend some time on the foam roller, to maybe have a, you know, 5-minute yoga practice a couple times a week, you know, just practice some of those extra movements. You know, I'm not a huge static stretching fan, but, you know, at the end of the day, if you want to do some static stretching and you just feel really tight, that can just make you feel better. And no, it's probably not going to prevent your next injury, but you might just feel better the next day. And I think there's real value in that.
Absolutely. And I also think if you are really sore and you are feeling really beat down, those types of things can also make it easier to sleep that night, easier to wind down if you put it at the end of your day. You also just, it's this week or the next week might be totally fine. You might be handling the volume totally fine in the hard workouts, and then you're not. You know, it just takes one day. It just takes one week to be totally off, and things can start to trend in the wrong direction from there. So setting yourself up to, I don't want to say like deserve the workouts, but they have to be matched in some way if you are going to be like upping the volume in a way to get you all the way to the finish line, depending on how many months this is. It's kind of a crucial part.
Yeah, I wouldn't say deserve the workout, but maybe earn the workout.
Earn the workout, yeah.
Yeah, you have to earn certain workouts and long run distances. I mean, you have to earn the right to run 20 miles. You can't do that in the first week that you pick up running, right? You've got to get there.
Absolutely, yep.
Holly, I think we have figured out how ultra runners can effectively add strength training to their training programs. There doesn't need to be any more conversation on this topic at all. We've done it. We're
done
there.
We hit it all. We hit it all.
I'm sure we missed a bunch, but I really hope this gets ultra runners at least thinking more strategically about their strength training habits and just understanding that there's so many benefits that can be gained, and it's really an indispensable part of the training process. So thank you for being here. If folks want to check in on you and see what you're up to on the internet, because I know you produce a lot of content as well, that's going to be super helpful. Where can folks find you?
Primarily, they can find me on my YouTube channel. You can just search Holly Martin. I think my handle now is Go Far So Good. I thought that was a cute little tagline there.
I like it.
So you can find me on YouTube or just my regular website, martinholly.com. I just reversed my name. And yeah, love to keep making content for you guys. This was awesome. It was really fun talking to you.
Yeah. And I will have links to that in the show notes so that you can check that out in the episode description. Holly Martin, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
What an episode. Thank you so much for listening and being part of our community here. If you're getting value from the Strength Running Podcast, if the show has helped your running or made you rethink how you approach your training, please consider leaving a review or a rating in Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen. Those reviews are incredibly impactful and helpful for this small business. If you have questions about your running, feel free to email me at support@strengthrunning.com, or you can search our website at strengthrunning.com. For more digestible tips, videos, memes, and more, follow me on Instagram at JasonFitz1. We'll be in touch.